Welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. We are back again for episode number 10. Can't believe it, but we actually made it to double digits, surprising pretty much everybody, including ourselves. But pretty excited, glad to be here, glad to be talking to you all again. My name is Shorty, and I am your host for tonight, and I'm joined by a couple of beans tonight. We have Cracker on the line. How are you going, Cracker?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And Chris. Chris has returned to the podcast. How are you going, Chris?
Doing well. Back from the hiatus.
Glad to have you. And now that we've actually got you on here, we may actually do a hashtag MTG finance section tonight. We'll see how we go.
But look out.
We've got the expert here. You've got a lot to live up to, Chris. all right. Well, we'll be kicking off tonight. We have no Scott, so there's no Blaster Watch, but we were surprised this week by a announcement that just popped up on my Facebook feed from Wizards of a championship series for Magic Arena being run by a third party for Australians and New Zealanders, or Aussies and Kiwis, as we'd like to call ourselves. It was pretty exciting to see something like that. It's being run by a company called Mogul, who I've never heard of. Either of you guys ever heard of Mogul before?
Nope.
No.
So, yeah, looking at their website, looks like they're a tournament organizer of some sort. They run tournaments for other popular online games and games that get streamed a lot. And, yeah, we sort of saw a similar thing with the Red Bull Untapped series that was held over in, I believe that was a Europe.
It was, yeah.
Yep.
Tournament system. So, yeah, when we saw that initial announcement for the Red Bull thing and saw Wizards' announcement for third-party organisers sort of getting involved, we mentioned it here on this podcast that hopefully somebody will pick up something in Australia, and here we go. We've got something here. So, Cracker, you got any details on what this tournament is?
Yeah, so it's, as you said, open to Aussies and Kiwis. We instantly all became massive fans of this company, Mogul. Thank you, because the time zone here is rubbish for any Australian, or for Australians compared to the Europeans or Americans. And there's a couple of different parts to it, right? There's a series of playoffs, and then there's also a finals. And yeah, there's some pretty good prizes they're putting up for this thing. There's $20,000 in cash, and also like $30,000 in prizes.
Yeah, which it doesn't actually specify what that is. I'm assuming like the event is sponsored by Razer, which you guys inform me is a
some sort of computer company we've actually heard of. Yeah, they make peripherals for PCs and the like.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm assuming maybe prizes from them, a new PC or some new gear to go with it or something. But who knows? But $20,000 in cash seems pretty good. So I'm definitely keen for that, and I signed up straight away. And I believe you guys, Chris, I saw you signed up for that one today.
Yeah, I've registered. It's $20,000 with no buy-in, so that seems like a good deal.
There's that finance advice we're after.
I will get my money back, guaranteed.
Yeah, so looking at there's not a ton of details on their website just yet, and we will link it in our show notes for this episode. So if you haven't seen any of these announcements, then, and you're from Australia or New Zealand, then make sure you definitely go and sign up for it. Actually, or maybe we should tell you not to sign up for it, so we've got more chance of winning. Is that
No, because the more people that play, the more likely they are to run it back, right?
That's right, yeah.
And that was one of the things we talked about, was that the way that Arena was really going to push the success of Magic was when these other companies jumped in and kind of really took it to the next level as a real esport, if you would.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it looks like from the sort of the vague details that they've got on there at the moment, there'll be a ladder style of period, it looks like. It's starting from about the 6th of October. I don't know if that's going to run just over a weekend or a day, but something along the lines of you challenge people that are at similar levels on the ladder to you, and if you win, you go up the ladder. If you lose, you go down the ladder, kind of similar, I guess, to how the arena current ladder system works, and the ranked system. And then whenever this period ends, the top 32 will then progress to a playoff series, which will start about a month later, or later in November. And then I'm not sure what the cutoff will be for that, but that will then go into a final series. So, yeah, like Chris said, it's free buy-in. There's no downside to registering it and if you can play, then you can play, and you got that potential to win some cash and win some prizes and get your name out there. And who knows, you might get one of those special invitations to a Mythic Invitational as a influencer, as they call people these days, or a personality.
I've got clout.
Yeah, that's the big one these days. Yeah, so do I. Like to tease people that use them, especially people that use them in a serious manner.
Unironically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's the Aussie way to pick up people for those sorts of things. So, we're just keeping on theme. So, this weekend, as we sort of mentioned on the previous podcast, is the pre-release for Throne of Eldraine. The full spoiler or preview card pool, I guess is the term, has been released. Yeah, the whole set. That's what I'm trying to think of. Just drawing a blank. The whole set's been released now, so we've seen every card that's in the set. And, yeah, needless to say, as we mentioned last time, there's some pretty cool cards there. There's been events running over the last couple of days for special streamer invites and things where people have been given access to the whole set of cards so they can brew. I know pretty much all day today there was events going on. So, yeah, there's a fair bit of hype around this set. And, Cracker, we were sort of talking before the cast about you were asking, have you seen any deck lists that you really like? And my response was that there's too many of them.
Yeah. It seems like every different person you look at, all the different streamers and all the different Magic personalities, all the guys from the MPL have all got different takes. Everyone's got like records that they're posting. Like Minguchi had some crazy red-black deck he was like 13-0 with and stuff. And, you know, then there are people talking about Oko being the truth. And it's just like, everywhere you turn, everyone is excited about something, which is great, right? That's the whole point of these early access events, to just get people hyped for the set.
Yeah, build some hype for the set, get people excited, get people out there. At the end of the day, what Wizards wants is people buying cards or spending money on Arena. So, make a good set, make it popular, and you're going to achieve that.
It gets people excited for the pre-release too, right? Which is a really good event for everyone to kind of rock up to.
I know definitely in the past, there's been sets that have come out that pre-release attendance has been pretty poor, just with no hype surrounding the set or lack of publicity and promotion, that sort of stuff. But as we've seen for the last few sets with the trailers and all that they've been doing, they're definitely promoting it and doing a really good job. And I would expect the pre-releases this weekend to have really good turnouts because, everyone's hyped for this set, and we will certainly be heading to a pre-release this weekend. As we mentioned on the last cast, we're all going to try and get together, although, Cracker, I believe you're missing out.
I have some family commitments, which I think, unfortunately, are going to keep me away. We'll see. I might turn up at the store and see you boys there anyway at the end. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, who knows? Yep. But, Chris, I believe you're making it to the pre-release this time.
Yeah, I'm registered. I'm signed up. I'm keen as. The set looks, set looks awesome. Really cool.
Happy very good.
Looking forward to getting my hands on some cards.
Yeah.
Where are we going, Shorty? Shout them out.
So, this weekend, we will be heading to Guff down in Geelong. We've been there a few times before. I think we've shouted them out on this podcast before. But the owner, I believe he's the owner, Paul. He's at least the guy that runs the shop. He runs a pretty good place. And we've been there quite a few times for random pre-releases. We have a place where a lot of the members of this cast go and stay down near that area, and a lot of us are going to be down there this weekend. So we'll be hitting up the Guff in Geelong for the 3 o'clock pre-release on Friday. So hopefully this podcast gets out to you on Friday, and if you are in the area, then come and see us, come and say g'day, come and tell us that you listen to us and give us some feedback and, play some games with this new set because it's going to be pretty exciting. So, I believe myself, Chris, Chewy and Scott should all be there tomorrow. So
No excuses this time about rocking up at midnight and being tired. Smack bang in the afternoon. Oh, no. Fresh.
Now I'm expected to win.
Why do you think I've got family commitments?
And no doubt, as almost always happens, I will get paired up with Chewy round one.
It's just inevitable.
Yes. Yep. So, speaking of the pre-release, we thought we might go into a little bit more detail on what a pre-release actually is. I think probably for most of the people on this cast, pre-release was one of the first tournaments that we played. I know for me, it was definitely like the tournament I think I played the most of when I first started out. Yeah, Chris, do you want to give us a bit of a rundown on what a pre-release is and sort of how it works, like how the event runs?
Yeah, so a pre-release is an event that's held generally a week before the actual release of a new set. So this weekend will be, yeah, the week prior to Throne of Eldraine being released. Pre-release is a chance to get your hands on the cards before everyone else does, hence the pre-release. And generally, they run a series of events that are all limited focused, and generally the format is sealed. So sealed being you get a pack of, I think it's six cards.
Six packs.
Six packs, and you build a 40-card minimum limited deck from the six packs that you crack. Generally they are just a standard sealed event. So you'll play a standard kind of Swiss round thing, and they often will run two-headed giant events during the weekend as well. It's effectively a limited sealed event. You build a limited 40-card deck from six booster packs of the new set.
Plus your sweet promo. You always get one sweet rare foil promo from the set as well, which is dated, which is really cool. They're a nice little collectible to have, and I've held on to most of mine except for one that I got that was like $60, so I immediately sold it.
Yeah. Like, I've same thing. I've always really liked the dated promo that you get, because it'll literally say the date that you're there playing the pre-release, and I've always found it to be a pretty cool thing to hang on to as a bit of a memento. But for some reason, they're not worth as much money as a set foil, even though they're probably more rare than a set foil. Rare. Well, the ones that we get now, it used to be back in the day, everybody got the exact same promo, and so those, it was like, okay, they're literally handing out thousands and thousands of these things, so I can see why they're not worth as much money. But now it's, you can actually get any rare or mythic from the set as your promo, so it's actually it's quite rare.
Yeah, it's a funny one, because it's usually rarity or scarcity jacks the price up, but in this case it doesn't. I think it's like signature cards. I think people like their cards, unadulterated. It tends to keep the price down for some reason.
Yeah. Well, people like to have all the same, right? Particularly if you're playing, like, just to diverge really quickly, super competitive events. If you get, like, Thought Seized, or someone takes, a Thought Erasure, right, to look at your hand, and they see that you've got a promo card, and then the next turn you play one that's the same, but it's not the promo, then they know you've still got that. So, it's about information for some people.
It's
if you're
like
a super spiky
playing
person.
The same land.
Yeah, whatever.
All the same land and things like that. Yeah. But to be honest, 90% of people don't pay attention to that sort of stuff, so it really doesn't matter. For the level that we play at, if you're playing at, you know, Mythic pro league level, then 100%, but or actual PTs,
then you're on Arena, but, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You only apply the card style to two of your four shocks.
So it's generally three or four rounds depending on what event that you go to. They seem to these days be running a few different types of events. I know at Guff in Geelong that we're going to, there's some casual or slightly more casual events, even though pre-releases are already super casual. A competitive event, and the one that we're going to at 3 o'clock is they're calling it a fast three. It's just three rounds, but prizing structure varies. Generally, the sort of usual prizing structure would be for every round you win, you get two booster packs. So it's always good value. You pay for us in Australia, it's $45 for entry for the pre-release.
Yeah,
you get your six packs, which is $42.
Yeah, packs in Australia are $7, guys.
Oh, they're seven now. Ugh.
Aren't they?
I thought they were six. Anyway, yeah, they're around that somewhere.
Something
basically
like that.
You get enough value just in buying your pre-release pack that it's worth it. So any rounds that you win and any prizes you get, it's just gravy and it's bonus. So yeah, it's always good fun. And these days you're getting an arena code, which I think we mentioned on a previous cast that you get a draft code. But apparently with this set, you get a code that gives you six boosters on arena. So keep an eye out for that. And that's definitely worthwhile to pick up. And yeah, you get your promo and that sort of stuff as well. So, all right. So you get your six packs. What do you do with them? You open them all up, and then what are you doing from there, Cracker? How do you sort of approach a sealed, whether it's a pre-release or an actual sealed event, it's effectively the same thing. You crack your packs and then what do?
So, I pull my rares to one side, first of all, because you've got a time frame, right? You've only got 40, 45 minutes to build the whole deck, which is, it's plenty of time as long as you don't panic and you just think about what you're doing. And like the first couple I did, I freaked out and I had no idea what was going on and it was just a horrible mess because, you know, like I've never done it before. But if you get into a rhythm and you kind of think clearly about what's going to happen, then it's actually plenty of time.
Yeah, so it's heaps of time.
What I do is I quickly flip through each pack individually and I will sort them by color to start with. So, I just have five piles and then I usually have a multicolor pile. I don't worry about trying to be too clever and having like all the different types of color pairs. I just whack all the multicolors into one big pile to start with, and then any rare lands or like two color lands in that pile or a separate one, and then like artifacts in a different one. So I probably end up with about seven or eight piles of cards, and mostly I'm trying to sort of lay them out in columns so I can have a pretty good idea of what I can see as I'm going along. And so as I open each pack, I sort through it, pull out the rare, have a look, because the most important thing is sealed is power, right? It's less about the synergy that you can do in draft, and you're kind of looking for bombs. You're looking for those big game finishes,
yeah,
these big splashy effects.
Your rares and your mythics, they're going to dictate what sort of a deck you're going to build in most circumstances in sealed.
Absolutely. Well,
at the level that we play at least.
Yeah, for sure. So, I go through all of those and start to look for what direction those rares are pulling me in. Now, sometimes they don't do anything. Like Chris, at our last pre-release, he opened a Graf Digger's Cage and a Leyline of the Void.
Yep, which was good.
It's pretty rough.
A little bit of money there. Back then.
I was actually fine cracking those, I'll be honest.
That's yeah. True. That's true.
It was a foil Leyline too, wasn't it?
Foil Graf Digger's.
But, I mean, so there were sometimes, like, constructed plants like those cards, which are, like, saw huge amounts of play in Modern and the like, but they're kind of just completely useless in Limited. So, you look for those things that like dragons, planeswalkers. Planeswalkers are super important. If you get Garruk or Oko, play those cards, right?
Yes.
They just play those cards, right? It basically kind of almost doesn't matter what else it is. You can look to shoehorn them into different colors or things that you normally wouldn't have, but they will just kind of take over the game. So, I look for those super powerful things first, and then after that, I start to dig through and look for the different types of things. So, I'll look at, like, do I have any really good uncommons that are pulling me in a particular direction? So, we're talking about the color pairs and things, and start to try and break it down from there is my first couple of steps.
Yeah. So, like I said, the rares tend to pull you or give you – the rares and mythics give you the cards that you want to get into your deck somehow, and often you'll find, yeah, you might have a really good red rare, but you go through the rest of your cards and you go, oh, actually, my red's not very good. So, that may be a card that you splash into your deck. So, you play, you know, a green-black deck, but you play a couple of red mana sources so you can play this really good rare. The uncommons, they're the meat of your deck because they're going to be they're more powerful than your commons, but you've got more of them than your rares. You know, you're opening six packs, which means you only have six rares or mythics, and if you get three lands as your three of your rares, then, well, there's half of your bomb cards effectively gone. And then if you get a couple of other cards that are like ley lines or something that are useless, then yeah, they're not really going to do too much for you. So the uncommons will help to pull you into a direction. So Chris, if you're like going into a pre-release blind, which to be honest, I sort of am this time. I haven't paid a ton of attention to the spoilers, and I haven't been keeping up with every card and listening to limited resources, reviews, and all that sort of stuff. If you're going in blind and you don't know each card, what's your sort of plan with that? Are you like literally reading every card, or, you know, one by one? Is that going to take you half an hour to do that, or do you have sort of a shortcut for figuring out what cards might be good and what's not?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So I use a similar method to what Cracker was talking about. So I'll start by cracking packs, and I'll be pretty heavily guided by any bomb rares or mythics that I'm cracking. Once I get past that though, and without knowing all the cards in the set, I'm starting to look for whatever I think my deck will need to do, at least based on what I think I need to be doing based on my rares or mythics. So, a couple of really key considerations that I've learned from the few limited events I've done. I've done a lot less of this than you guys. but one of the key things I've learned is being really careful of my curve. So,
yes.
even without knowing all the individual cards, I know that I have 40 cards that I need to work with. I know that a certain percentage of those need to be lands, and then I need to know that the rest of my deck is going to function. So, I can't just play all these huge, stompy 6-7 mana cards. I need to be able to have something to do on turns 1, 2, 3, so on, so that my deck actually functions and I can play a game of Magic. So, I will start breaking down, what the kind of key, color pairs or combinations I think that I'm going to be playing in, and I'll start to look for a good mix of creatures and ideally some removal. That's another really key, key thing to be looking out for when you're building any kind of limited deck, is to look for removal at a common or an uncommon level, and often that can pull you into a color pair as well, and make sure that you've got a good mix of removal and creatures or whatever your deck is looking to do.
And that removal can be a burn spell or an actual removal spell, destroy target creature or whatever. Another form of removal that gets used quite regularly, especially in sealed, is the enchantments that shrink a creature. I'm sure I've seen one in this new set, but it's something that gives a creature -6/-0. So it's the creature's still there, it's not dead, but it can no longer attack you. It might still be able to block, but it's kind of just doing nothing. So those sorts of removal spells are, you wouldn't normally play them in a constructed format, in standard and definitely not in modern, but in a format like sealed, that's definitely something that that you'll look to play. So you're looking for your bomb cards, you're looking for some removal, you're making sure that you've got a good curve. One thing you want to sort of think about generally in limited and almost definitely in sealed, one drops, one mana creatures, especially, you tend not to play them. They're not impactful enough to actually be worth including in your deck. They're great if you draw them on turn one, but because you're playing a limited card pool, you've probably only got one of those creatures. So, your odds of having it on turn one is really small. So, if you draw it on turn 7 or 8 or 10, it's a one mana 1/1 that does absolutely nothing. So, that's definitely something to think about. But generally from, two mana creatures, your grizzly bears, your 2-mana 2/2s and things like that, you want to start filling out your curve. And then have a nice even curve, 2s, 2s, 3s, and 4s in your mana curve. You want plenty of those, and then just a couple of 5s and up. Obviously, depending on your deck, if you manage to get lucky and you get a whole bunch of mana ramp and things like that, then you might play a higher curve. Something that's general sort of across the board for the difference between sealed and draft is sealed is generally a little bit slower than draft. In a draft format, as Cracker sort of mentioned before, you're picking your cards as they go around and you're building synergies and finding all those things that work together. So your deck is a little bit more cohesive. It's not quite a constructed deck, but it is much more cohesive because you've picked cards that work together. In a sealed format, like a pre-release, you get whatever you open. So that can sometimes be really good, or sometimes it can be absolutely horrible and you just have no synergies at all. I know we've probably all had experiences where you open this really, really good rare, but its mana cost is 3 and 3 red, and you open no other red cards, and it's not a card that you can splash because there's no way you can fit that into your
that into happened your to me to get it to last work. Pre-release. I opened Dracuseth,
yep,
who is like insane, but he's exactly that. He's a triple red and 4, and he's this big splashy dragon, and I end up playing blue black.
Yeah,
my red support wasn't there.
Yeah. So, how many lands are we looking to play in our sealed decks generally?
17.
Yep.
Yep. I think 17 is the mean.
Yep. there's some arguments for 16, there's some arguments for 18, but if you decide that you're going to play 17 lands, it is very difficult for you to be that radically wrong.
Yeah.
The thing about limited and particularly sealed, which we've kind of touched on quickly, is aggro is bad. Don't play aggressive decks because you don't have critical mass of these one drops and cheap burn spells, right? You can't play, you know, Fervent Champion into Shock into like these, you know, really aggressive mono red Boros, you know, red white game plans. You will just get stomped. You might steal a game.
Occasionally, they will work, but not very often.
But in sealed, it's almost impossible. So everyone is playing a variation of a mid range deck.
Yeah.
And as Chris said, removal is really important because while you're jamming all your bombs, guess what? Everyone else is too. So you need a really good way to be able to answer your opponent's really big threats. And one thing that I've learned and took me quite a while to work out is that you don't need huge amounts of expensive cards. Like, you don't need a bunch of 7-mana 6/6s or whatever they are, you know, like vanilla kind of green stompy creatures. You will win more games with like 3/3s and 2/2s than you think you will.
Yeah.
And so it's important to understand that, like, yes, it's really good to have those big powerful effects, but you shouldn't have a lot of them in your deck because they will get stuck in your hand for a long time and they don't necessarily win you the game.
Yeah, that comes back to the curve consideration, I think, more absolutely. Than anything. But when someone's been holding their mythic bomb creature in hand, and you have a common piece of removal that just takes care of it, feels really good. So
bad, depending on which side you're on.
really bad. So
if you see your opponent sitting there getting frustrated and they finally play a second color source, and you know something big is coming down, just save your removal for whatever it is.
Yeah, good advice. So 17 land is a good spot to start. Generally, like in draft, you may, as Cracker said, you may go down to 16 or go up to 18, depending on what deck you're playing and what the format is like. But for sealed, and especially for pre-release, just stick to 17 land, 23 spells. Ideally, you want, for most decks, you want a lot of creatures, because that's generally how you're going to win the game, is attacking with creatures. So you're going to want 12, 15-ish creatures, maybe even more, depending on what you've got. You're not really playing that many actual spells. And the spells that you're playing, you want them to be impactful. You want them to be removal spells or burn spells or spells that actually have an effect on the game. You know, you may play one or two, depending on your deck, like pump spells, like a Mighty Leap or something like that. But you're generally going to stay away from your combat tricks and just try and play your creatures, kill their creatures, and just attack them. But your games will generally go for a long time. Like, it's pretty rare like that 10 in a
plus
sealed,
turns kind of thing.
You're not often going to win or lose in five or six
you
turns.
You can. It'll happen. You definitely can, right? You can absolutely just, you know, curve out a series of two drops and three drops and your opponent stumbles and you just run them over. But typically that's not what's going to happen. You'll get stuck on four lands with a five drop in your hand and, you know, kind of no way to progress, which is a good point to mention. You'll usually see in the common cycle, and again, like Shorty, I don't know every card in the set, so forgive me, but there's almost always some sort of card that has a mana sink ability on it. So an activated ability of some description, which lets you tap a bunch of mana for some sort of effect. So take one of all the rare lands in this cycle, actually, a really easy point. Yeah, all the castles, right? So for each of the five colors, there's a rare land, which is a castle, and they all have a different effect. So like the blue one is tap two blue, two, and this, and you scry two. Means look at the top two cards of your library. You can put them on the top or the bottom. The white one lets you make soldiers and things. So those are the kind of abilities that, even though the creature itself might only be like a 2/2 to start with, if it's got an activated ability of some description where you can put a bunch of mana into it to make it +1/+1, or it gives you, you know, like you can tap it to give something else unblockable or something for those kinds of things, those effects are much more valuable in sealed than kind of anywhere else. Because you will get those places where you're both empty-handed and you want to be able to spend your mana on something each turn.
And it's a card that you can play early and still have it be useful or relevant later on in the game when you've got a ton of mana and, yeah, you draw it off the top. It's, yeah, there was, I can't remember the name of it, and someone's going to shoot me for not knowing this, but in one of the previous sets, there was a 2-mana 2/2 that you could pay. It had the evolve, adapt.
Yeah, Growth adapt. Chamber Guardian.
Yeah, that might be the one. Don't know. But yeah, any of the creatures with those abilities where you can play it early, it's good. It's a good early creature. And then you draw it late and it's like, oh, I've got 7 mana. I've played my 2/2. Oh, hang on. I can actually turn it into a 5/5 or whatever. So
yeah, there was a lot of those.
Yeah.
Like Scuttle Gators and things like that.
Yeah. So yeah, those sorts of things are definitely things to look out for. So you put your deck together. From your experience, are you looking at your colours going, okay, this is what I want to play? You know, I've got some really strong black cards and some really good green cards and a couple of bombs in those colours. I'm going to just put them all together and sort of filter out the cards that I look at and go, no, that's not very good. That's a 1-mana 1/1 or whatever. Are you just building one deck and that's it, you're done? Are you trying different colours? What's, like, how would you approach that sort of a thing?
So for me, I usually get drawn to a colour pair initially, right? There's always something for me that grabs my attention, whether through my own biases or through the cards that I see, right?
Yep. And you go, all right, that is something to mention. Generally in sealed, you will play 2 colours. It's extremely rare that you're playing a mono colour, and often it is 2 colours with a splash for a bomb somewhere in there as well. So you may actually be playing 3 colours.
Yep. And particularly in this set, as we just mentioned, there is the rare lands are all monocolor, so they only tap for 1 colour, and their common lands, which in like previous sets have been 2 colours where they enter tapped and you gain a life, in this set they are all again monocoloured. So there is very, very small amounts of fixing. There's a single tri-land which taps for red, white and black, but that's only for knights and equipment. So if you're in the Mardu Knights deck, congratulations. and there's also the rare land which lets you go and fetch a basic. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's right.
Fabled right. Passage.
That's the one.
That's cool.
And enters untapped. So, but that's it. So, in this set, more so than others, there's no guild gates. There's no gain lands, as they're called, where you gain a life when they come into play. So, you will be really restricted by your mana base. And be sensible about that. Try not to play 3 colours, unless it's for, like, some crazy top end that is really worthwhile, because there's just not enough fixing at all of the different spots to support it very well.
Yeah. Often you can play like a green base deck. I don't know what the fixing is like in this format yet, but if there's a bunch of green stuff that says search your library for a land and cards like Gilded Goose that can add 1 mana of any color, you can play a green base deck and splash a couple of other colors fairly easily. But if you're solely relying on, you know, I'm playing red, white, and blue, and all I'm relying on is naturally drawing the colours that I need, and I've got a whole bunch of double white, double red, double blue cards, you're just going to get stuck with cards in your hand all the time, and you're not going to have much fun because you're not going to get to cast the spells that you want to cast. So, yeah, from what I've seen for this format, generally 2 colours and try and avoid going further than that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, as I was saying, I will typically have a colour pair that jumps out at me, usually with some, you know, bombs that we're talking about, usually some good removal spells, and I will put that together. The way that I actually build my deck is I lay out my creatures on top and my spells on bottom, and I start at 1 and I lay them out in their mana cost. So you can actually see the curve, as it's referred to. It should really look like a bell curve, right? You should basically have nothing at 1. You'll probably have most of your cards at like 3, with a bunch at 2 and 4, you'll have maybe 1 or 2 5 drops and maybe a 6 drop plus, right? Maybe a couple. But that's kind of what I'd expect to look at. And that lets me get a good idea of what's going on. And I will then put that aside and reevaluate my pool and say, all right, so here's what my baseline is. What did I miss? What else is there that I could do instead? And I will try and build something else. And quite often it'll be like, my black is amazing. It's got 4 removal spells and it's got Rankle, right? It's got a bomb, which I'm just playing. There's no way I'm off that color. So I would look at, okay, so to start with, I'm going to be blue black, right? It gives me some card draw, it gives me some bounce. Okay, that looks like a really good base foundation, but I've got some really good green stuff. I'm not sure if it's better or worse than my blue. Let's have a look at that. And so then I would put all my blue stuff aside and I would put all my green together and I would look at how it filled out the curve, right? Am I better off with a card draw spell or am I better off filling up my, you know, grizzly bear slot? Do I
You're
have
always
no
better off
game?
With a card draw spell.
I mean, I think so.
That might not be true. Don't believe me.
Can you see what my biases are, blue black? Yeah. But, you know, that and that's where I would start, right? And just... Yes. And ask people, right? Like, if you're there with your crew, just be like, hey, which of these pools do you think is better? Or is there something in here that I'm missing? And get some other opinions.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Especially at a pre-release, the REL, the rules enforcement level, which we've mentioned before, is casual.
So, zero.
Yeah, basically zero. Yeah, so you can do almost whatever you want. And yeah, definitely ask your friends. If it's your first ever pre-release, yeah, get someone to come and help you. And often the judges will ask when you sort of start building your decks, is this anyone's first pre-release? And if anyone puts their hand up, you know, if you need a hand building your deck, just sing out and we'll come and give you a hand. So there's always people that are willing to help for that sort of thing. So you've figured out your colors that you're going to go. Chris, how do you go about building your mana base?
Most common starting point, similar to what Cracker said, is once I think I've got my deck together, I usually lay it out by converted mana cost as well, so I can see everything. And I basically sit down and start counting all of the little coloured pips in my card. So, in my cards.
Yeah, all the mana symbols?
Yeah, that's right. So, if I'm a green... red deck, I will literally count every green symbol in the mana costs of all my cards, and I will count up every red symbol in the mana costs of my cards, and then I will use that to determine what the rough breakdown of my forests versus mountains are going to be for my mana base. So I might end up having 20 green pips and 10 red, and then I would end up having a rough... two forests for every one mountain kind of split. So, you would end up having whatever that works out to be with 17.
Yeah. You'd have like a 10-7.
Probably
10
and 7.
Like that.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of thing.
You may have a couple of non-basic lands in there as well. So, that changes what you're adding. If there are dual lands in the set, then, yeah, that's going to affect things as well. So,
yep. And there's a few exceptions as well. If I have, say, more green mana pips in my cards and less red, but my curve or my low curve cards are red, then that will impact how many of a mana source I will put in. So I might put in one or two extra mountains than I would otherwise if I'm just looking at a raw split to make sure I'm hitting that so I can play my cards that I need to play on curve early on. So little things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all pretty much follow that same process, I'm sure. There's a better way of
doing
it. I
mean, I learned from Chewy, and I think Chris did as well. And it works,
and
right?
Yeah, like, it's the simplest way to do it, quickest and easiest, and it sort of makes the most sense. And like Chris said, if you're taking into consideration when you're going to need to cast the spells and letting that affect you as well, then, yeah, that's a really good spot to start. So, yeah, there's no point going, okay, well, I'm going to run 10 forests and 7 mountains, and all you want to be doing in the first couple of turns is casting red spells, because you probably, like, your chances of having a red land are going to be reduced. So, yeah, you definitely need to take those things into consideration. So, you finish building your deck, you sleeve it up. Definitely recommend, if you've never been before, either buy some sleeves while you're there or bring some sleeves from home, but shuffling a deck with no sleeves is a nightmare, and is also really bad for your cards that you just got, and you may have opened something nice and expensive and hopefully shiny that's worth
that
a lot of money.
Sweet,
so
mythic promo foil.
Yeah, so definitely recommend bringing some sleeves for a casual level event like this. It doesn't really matter what you're using. It's no one's checking your sleeves to make sure they're marked or anything like that, but don't bring marked sleeves. That's a good PSA there. Yeah, sleeve them up, and then generally, I would shuffle up my deck and do a little bit of gold fishing just to make sure it looks like it works, and then wait for the first round to start, and then, yeah, go and have some fun and enjoy the night, really. So, Cracker, I think you had a few a little bit of a breakdown of some of the archetypes specific to this format. Did you want to give us a quick rundown on some of those?
Yeah. So, there are a few clearly defined color pairs, and there are sub-themes within those. So, for this particular set, we've got white-blue as artifacts and enchantments. You'll see in this set, for the first time in a while, they've printed colored artifacts, which is something that they've kind of come and gone on a couple of times. They're typically colorless, but in this time, there's legendary artifacts in every color, I think, and they're all kind of pretty splashy and powerful. But that's kind of their base. What am I trying to say? Synergy. So there is like there's an aura, so an enchantment for a creature that says this creature gets +1/+1 for each other like enchantment or artifact you control. So it's those kinds of things that you can look at. Green-black is based around food. The food mechanic is a new one. Shorty, do you want to quickly run us through what that is?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
No. So, food is an artifact token, yep. And you can pay 2 and tap it and sacrifice it and yep. Gain 3 life.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah,
so but there are also a bunch of other cards. You've done well. The Golden Goose is an example as you can actually sacrifice foods to other cards and they'll have different abilities. So, like the Golden Goose will let you sacrifice a food to make a mana of any color. So, there's in the green-black, there's a whole lot of themes around either gaining food tokens and not necessarily sacrificing them for their face value of gain 3 life, which is kind of okay, yeah, not amazing.
It's not amazing, but it's something.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
But there'll be some other effects where your creature will get +1/+1 or something like that. So, there's those kinds of things. As we mentioned before, there is a very strong knight focus in this set. It seems quite pushed in the colors of red, white, and black. So, any combination of those, you probably don't want to go 3 colors. Again, as I was saying, just because the mana's not great.
Yeah, unless you open a bunch of those lands, the dry land, but that's not likely.
There's actually a red-black equipment I saw, which equips for less to knights and things. So, there's some interesting sort of synergies here to look out for. Red-green this time is around non-humans. So, it will say, like, non-humans you control get this, or non-humans control, you know, lose this or gain that. So, there's some interesting synergies around kind of the thematically, the beasts and the wild side of the plane. Blue-green is ramp. Usually is. It's kind of core identity for the Simic guild. They like to just cast big things. And so, there are creatures that are, there's one that's a blue and a green for, I think it's a 1/1, and it taps to add blue and a green. So, you can kind of accelerate some really big things out. Green-white is based around adventures. So, we spent a fair bit of time talking about the different adventure cards last time, where you cast them as an instant or sorcery, they get exiled, and then you can cast them again as a creature later on. And blue-black is about graveyards, which is usually its kind of jam. This time, it cares about both graveyards. So, it will be effects that check how many cards are in your opponent's graveyard. There is a 2-mana 5/5 that has flying, and it can't attack unless your opponent has 7 or more cards in the graveyard, and it can't...
Can't block unless you have four or more cards
in your hand.
Yeah.
So, there's some really interesting things that will check different zones, which is quite a departure. If M20 was your first kind of foray into Magic, that was kind of a really good fundamental set. And this is a lot more complicated. This is a really, you know, they used to call these, what, advanced expansions or something like that, I think was the term. So, this is the real kind of... it's a good set. It looks really interesting. So, those are kind of the key themes. And as we were saying, with Sealed, you kind of just go with, like, card quality and volume and see if there's some of these synergies. There's usually the two-color uncommons. So, there'll be, you know, a blue-green card. I think, in fact, the one I was just talking about was taps to add blue-green is the uncommon. So, it will be a signpost. And so, you can kind of look at those ones and go, all right, so this is a really powerful effect in this kind of pair. What else have I got that plays off that? And it lets you look into the, you know, what might work well.
Yeah, definitely. So, it gives us a bit of an idea, something to look for. Like we said, in Sealed, you may not always get those synergies, but those little things that add up. You know, you might not be able to put together a full knight deck, but you may have a couple of cards that synergize together, or you might find an artifact or something that works with your knights that you want to throw in as well. So definitely keep an eye out for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you use them as effectively what you'd call a tiebreaker, where if you've got, you know, like two mana, two twos, and one is a knight and one is a shaman, then you would put your knight in because it's got a possible upside with, you know, your rare or something like that. So you kind of start paying attention to some of those keywords just as like the last sort of thing you're looking at when you're doing your deck building.
Yep. Cool. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing with your pre-release is it's a fun, casual event. They are actually one of the best events for new players to go to. They are always very relaxed. Everybody's always super excited because it's a new set and they're brand new cards. It's the first time you get to play with them, that sort of thing. So if you've never been and you're thinking of going, go and do it. They'll be running the whole weekend from Friday all the way through to Sunday evening. That'll be happening on Arena, I believe, as of effectively tomorrow. When this podcast goes out there, it should be live on Arena. So you can jump on there and do sealed events, which work effectively the same. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting weekend. So hopefully you get out there and have some fun. And if we happen to bump into you down at Guff in Geelong, then yeah, come and say good day because should be good. The last thing to mention on your pre-releases, which Scott was educated on this week, is your pre-orders of booster boxes can actually be picked up from the pre-release. Now, one thing I've seen Paul at Guff from Geelong do many times when we've been down there is while people are there, while you're actually at the pre-release, if you haven't pre-ordered a booster box, you can still technically pre-order it, and I'm doing air quotes as I'm saying this, on the pre-release weekend. So you can purchase it for a discounted price. Generally, like in Australia, you might pre-order a box for around 150 to 160. If you then wait a week and buy it the week after when the set gets released, you might be paying 180, you know, up to 200, that sort of thing. So if you're interested, and this happens all the time, people go in for the pre-release, they have a ton of fun, and they go, oh, sweet, I'm going to buy a whole box and go home and crack them, then definitely do that. I myself have pre-ordered a box. I'll be picking it up from Guff when we're there on the weekend. I'm pretty excited about that. You also get the promo that you can only get as a buy box, which I don't know, Chris, is that looking like it's an expensive one, or I haven't been paying any attention to that one?
Oh, it's hard to say. It feels like it's a commander card. So
yeah, it definitely looks like a commander card.
Probably wait and see how much of an impact that has. Yeah. But yeah, it is a foil mythic. I think it's the Kenrith sibling's father. Yep.
Yes. So you can only get that foil version with buying a booster box of cards, so the 36 packs of cards. You also this time get a collector's booster, which we haven't really mentioned much on this podcast, but they're with this set specifically, that's a special booster that comes out with the alternate art you may have seen of some of the cards, the fairy tale adventure cards with fancy art and fancy bordering and that sort of stuff. They come in those packs. You get all the commons and uncommons in the pack of foils. So it's pretty cool. You can buy collector's boxes, which Chris, I know you've ordered some of. We won't mention on this cast how many you've ordered.
Yep, I've ordered a couple.
You've ordered a number. But yeah, I think for most of us on the cast, we like to buy a box or at least buy a bundle or something like that and get together and crack the packs. And I know my wife is hanging for me to come home with this booster box because she's really looking forward to cracking these packs. Like we'll just sit on the couch watching TV and she'll crack the packs and just look at the art and look at the cards. And yeah, I think she's pretty excited about this set. So I'm definitely looking forward to that this weekend.
Yeah, so definitely be cool. It's worthwhile mentioning as well that stores only have a limited allocation of the buy box promos and collector boosters, so don't expect that you will automatically get one if you were looking to order one on the weekend, because they may have already exhausted their allocation.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's people like Chris that go around and buy boxes everywhere and get all the promos so no one else
can
get them.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Speaking of the game, I've got one last tip about the actual pre-release event.
Yes.
So when you sit down, quite often someone will say, hey, do you want an ID? And the first time someone said that to me, I was like, huh? I had no idea what it meant. Yes. So, an ID stands for intentional draw. And it basically means, as Shorty was saying, the price structure is winning gets two packs, losing gets zero. And intentional draw means you both get a pack. And because it's a really friendly event and everyone just wants more packs and no one wants to, you know, miss out because they just didn't draw their second color, a lot of people will ID. So, if someone asks you that, you can say yes. And at which point, when the slip comes around, you both just write 111 and you sign it and that's it. If you don't, you don't have to. Don't feel pressured to say, yes, I will do that. If you think your deck is awesome and you're out to just crush, then go nuts. You can. You're just accepting the risk that, you know, you might get two packs or you might get none. Yeah. And feel free to ask other people. And don't take it personally if they say no. I've had both happen. And it's fine.
Yep. Yeah, my general rule of thumb is if I open my packs and I build a deck that looks really good, I will play my first round. And if I win, I will not offer any IDs and I probably will not accept them. But if I open a open a pool that's pretty average and I play my first round and I lose, I will offer IDs for the rest of the night because, yeah, I don't like leaving with zero prizes. I like to come away with at least something. So
Shorty has the worst luck I've ever seen with sealed pools.
So the next thing... Yeah. We won't go into that. That'll just be me whinging, and we don't want to hear about that.
Oh, we need a KCI replacement, man.
Yes, we do. All right. So, with the new set release, that brings up something called rotation, which we've mentioned a few times on this podcast. And for established Magic players, you'll be used to this now, but it's changed over the years how often the rotations happen, but currently, it's in a yearly structure, and basically, once a year, this time of year, there's a new set that's going to come out, and that's going to force old sets out of the standard format. So, we haven't really gone into too much detail as to what the formats are. We've definitely mentioned them a few times, but standard is the most recent sets, and yeah, basically, as of tomorrow, or, well, tomorrow on Arena, and October the 4th, in paper, there's going to be sets that are currently in standard that will you no longer be legal and you'll be no longer able to play them, which is unfortunate for our dear friend Blaster Boy, who loves his mono red deck because half of that deck is going to be rotating out. But
nah, Cavalcade's still real, man.
Yeah,
Cavalcade
I think there's going to be plenty of replacements for him, so he'll be fine. Yeah. So, Chris, do you know which sets we're losing when this rotation happens?
Yeah, so as of the 4th of October in paper, we're going to be losing Ixalan, Rivals of Ixalan, Dominaria, and Corset 2019. So
and everybody cheers that Teferi of Hero of Dominaria will be gone.
One of the Teferis. One of the Teferis. Us, yeah.
One I of don't even know if it's the worst one, man.
No, it's probably not.
I'm thinking that too. Yeah. So a very big shakeup. When you get to this point in a standard season, you've got a very large pool of cards for standard.
So currently we have 8 sets in standard. So that's a lot of cards in standard.
Yeah.
That's the biggest it gets.
Yeah.
Yes. And then with the release of Throne of Eldraine, that will get reduced down to 5 in total. Yep. So we will still have Guilds of Ravnica, Ravnica Allegiance, War of the Spark, Corset 2020, and of course Throne of Eldraine once that's released. So yeah, big shake up, a lot of cards leaving, a lot of good cards moving out, but also some really awesome stuff coming in with Throne of Eldraine.
Yeah, so it's always a massive change in the standard format because you've had these decks that have been staples that have they've slowly over the course of the 8 sets that are in standard being released built up and built up and built up till they get to the point where it's like this is a really really good deck, and then all of a sudden rotation happens and half the cards get taken out of that pool. And that deck just doesn't exist anymore. It can't function. Like a deck like Esper Control that's been, or Esper Hero that have been really dominant and popular for the last few months, half the cards in the deck are going to rotate out, mainly the mana base, and all of a sudden it's completely different. You can't play that deck anymore. So it's always a massive shakeup. You lose a whole bunch of sets, as well as getting a whole brand new set coming into the format. So it's a very exciting period. Some people don't like it. This is generally the period of time when Magic players will go, oh, I've just lost all my cards out of my deck. I don't want to play anymore, which I've definitely done a couple of times. But it's generally a pretty exciting thing, and it leads to a lot of brewing going on and a lot of innovation and people coming up with new things to play and new decks. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye out on social media and the various podcasts that you listen to that people will be going through what they're playing and what decks they're brewing up. So we may touch on our next podcast. We're hoping maybe to do a little bonus episode for you this weekend, but we'll see how we go. And we may have a bit of a chat about what we're looking forward to playing. But if you're unsure about the rotation process, when it's going to happen, what sets rotate, all that sort of stuff, there is a very handy website called whatsinstandard.com. Pretty self-explanatory website, that one. And you go there and it literally has a little graphic that shows you, okay, these sets are currently in standard until this date. And then as of this date, these sets will rotate out and these sets will come in, that sort of thing. So it's very good. So if you're ever unsure, go and check out that website. So Cracker, I've got all these cards that I've been playing with for the last couple of years now,
mm-hmm.
and they're rotating out. What am I doing with them? Am I just throwing them in the bin, or am I giving them to Chris, or what am I doing?
Yes, correct.
The second option.
Chris doesn't have enough cards already. So it really depends, right? There's a few options. Some of the cards you have will already be seeing play in other formats. You will have cards that hit Modern and Legacy. If you decide to play those, there'll be a bigger set of cards that possibly go into Commander or Brawl, if that's kind of your jam. And also, there is the much anticipated, is that a word that we should use for Historic?
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. So, there's a new format coming specifically to Magic Arena called Historic, which is basically, at this stage, just big standard. So, it's literally going to be the standard sets that Chris just listed out that are disappearing. So, Ixalan, Rivals of Ixalan, Dominaria, Core 19, plus all the other ones. So, it's standard that you've been playing up until, you know, tomorrow, but then you also get to add Throne of Eldraine cards to it. So, there's some pretty limited runs in terms of when those events will be firing on Magic Arena. And, you know, we may dig into that a little deeper as that kind of comes online. But basically, it's just going to be an extended kind of format where you can play standard cards that you've already got and sunk all your wild cards into for longer is kind of the key plan. But unfortunately, a lot of the cards, yeah, you just kind of have to accept that that is part of rotation, and there will be cards that have been seen playing now that just are effectively no longer useful. And that is just the nature of the game.
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things with Magic, and I guess that's
what makes it interesting as well.
It's what makes it interesting, but
if you can kind of separate yourself from the monetary value, which is easier to do with some things than others,
yeah,
you will, you know, you can kind of just go, all right, well, I've got all these new toys to play with now. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's kind of what happens with cards. Pretty much.
So speaking of money, Let's get a little bit of hashtag MTG finance advice from our resident finance guru. He loves it. So I've got all these cards that are rotating out. Another option is to sell them. Is it worth me selling cards? Is it worth me buying them? What do you reckon with cards that have just rotated out of standard? What's going to happen to their prices?
So There's a couple of general macro trends that happen when standard rotation occurs. So the general thing that happens is that all of the sets that are rotating out of standard generally see the prices decline. Standard is the most, generally speaking, the most represented or the most played format in Magic.
Competitively. Yeah, Commander is the biggest format in terms of just raw number of players.
Yeah, as far as tournament play is concerned, Standard is generally the most represented format. As a result of that, when you've got more people playing competitively, more people have the cards, and therefore, when Standard rotation occurs, you have a lot of people who own a lot of these cards who are now looking to offload them or don't know what to do with them. And that just causes an oversupply, and generally that's where you have a decline in pricing. When it comes to what you should do or your awareness when it comes into a standard rotation, the advice is generally if you're wanting to sell cards, you would not wait until now. unfortunately, now is too late because everyone knows what's going on. If you were conscious of, you know, some cards that you own tanking in value and you wanting to get as much value as you can for them, you really need to be looking at selling those cards well before standard rotation is on the horizon, generally, you know, 3 to 6 months before that is occurring, or when there is a, you know, a bit of a hype spike for a particular archetype or something that comes up.
Which is hard to do when you want to continue playing with those cards.
That's the problem, right?
So, like catch-22.
Yeah, you don't want to be selling.
You
just need more
so you can sell all of the books for your playset.
Here's the best bit of advice. Have multiple playsets of Earth Metal. So that's generally how it works. Now, there's some opportunities that come with standard rotation as well. So, like Cracker was saying, there's some cards post-standard rotation that we'll see play in other formats like Commander or Modern or Legacy. Standard rotation is often a really good time to pick up the cards that you believe will see play in some of those formats. So, just trying to think back to some past formats. You know, there might be some staples like Walking Ballista or, a range of cards that see a lot of play in Modern and Commander and other formats, which will usually see a bit of a low point around standard rotation. And it's generally the best time to pick them up. If you think that you're going to then, you know, want one to throw in your Commander deck, or if you play Modern, it's a good time to pick them up then.
So, we're thinking things like check lands, Chris, that are disappearing out will sort of be good, or are they kind of just already high because of how much play they see in Modern?
The check lands, I don't think worthwhile getting into because they generally don't see much play in Modern.
Okay.
So, they generally
it depends
quite
on what
high.
You're talking about, sorry. Like, whether you're talking about buying things to be able to resell them later, or whether you're talking about buying them because they're now dropped, right?
Yeah. If
I want to pick up some Dragon Skull Summits for Commander, is now a good time to look at those?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
So, any of that stuff, like I was saying, so if you think you are going to want to play a certain card that's rotating out of Standard in another format, like Commander or Modern, now is a good time to get them, for sure, regardless of potentially what it is. So, yeah, any of those types of cards are great to pick up now. Check lands included if you see value in them. So far as just long-term value, check lands probably aren't a great pickup because they generally don't see much play in Modern or in formats outside of Standard when they're legal. Speaking of rotation too, the check lands are actually quite a big shake-up to Standard. It creates quite a lot of problems with mana. Now that they're leaving and we only have half a cycle of the temples, there's some color combinations which are going to be a little bit more difficult to work with than others. So, those check lands actually will have a big impact.
Yeah. So, I think generally, if you want to pick up something for yourself to play now and the next month or two is going to be the best time to just buy it, because it's probably not going to get any cheaper than it is currently in the next couple of months. Because generally what will tend to happen is if a card doesn't get reprinted, whether it sees much Modern play or not, it will slowly increase in price just due to how long ago it was printed, that sort of stuff. If you're looking to speculate on a card to make money off of it, buy it in the next month or two. But you want to be looking for cards that are Modern staples, cards that are Commander staples. The thing you're looking for mainly in Modern is, like Chris was saying with the check lands, they do get played, but they're often played as, you know, one or two of, that sort of thing. If you can find those cards that are played as a four of in Modern decks, they're going to be worth money. And card like Walking Blister is a prime example of that. I think it dropped down to like $10 or something like that, sort of not long after rotation or somewhere around then. And I don't know what it is now, but I know it's at least $20. So, because it often gets played as a four of, and it's played as a four of in multiple decks. So, yeah, they're the sorts of cards that if you can get in on early, then you can actually make some good money on. The other way to go about it is trading. Like, there's going to be a whole bunch of people, like, we don't do it, but I definitely used to do it back in the day, people that go to your store regularly that have trade binders, and they always come up to you, got trades, and we always laugh at them because that we just don't do that stuff anymore. But they're going to have a trade binder full of cards that they don't want anymore because they only play standard, they don't play modern, whatever their reasoning is, that have just massively tanked in price. So you can go, I've just been to a pre-release and I've opened these couple of rares that I don't think I'm going to play with but are actually currently worth a lot of money. I can trade them off and pick up these modern staples that I'm going to play with for years and years and years and are going to go up in value. So that's definitely another good way to look at it. But, good time to be spending some money, I think, is the
key. Unfortunately, you've also got all the new cards that you have to buy, which makes it a little tricky.
There's that as well. Yeah.
Whatever.
There's always money to be spent, no matter what the season,
especially when it comes to Magic cards. All right, cool. So, I think we might leave it there and wrap it up there. That's been a pretty solid episode, and I think we've covered plenty of good tips. And like I said, hopefully we'll get together and find enough time this weekend to get a bonus episode out there for you and give you a bit of a rundown on how we went at the pre-release. But if you do get out to a pre-release yourself and you want to let us know how you go, then hit us up in the usual places. You can find us on Twitter at MagicBeansCast. Or flick us an email, magicbeanscast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook, just search for Magic Beans Cast, or go and watch Chewy's video. I'm sure he'll be putting up some stuff from the Throne of Eldraine. Just had a blank on what the new set was. Once the set's up on Arena, I'm sure he'll be doing some drafts and things on there. So go and look him up on YouTube, Magic Beans Cast on there as well. So if you want to follow me for some reason on Twitter, I am at Peace Inc. Cracker, you are?
Joel Hill _.
And Chris?
At Polywaffle MTG.
Very good. And yeah, that's going to do us. So good luck this weekend. Hope you enjoy your pre-release. Hope you open some really sweet foils. I think the Okos, foil Okos, might be the thing to open this weekend. And we will see you next time.